Welcome to SLP Nerdcast. I'm Kate.
And I'm Tracy, standing in for Amy, who's on vacation this week.
We appreciate you tuning in. In our podcast, we review and provide commentary on resources, literature, and discuss issues related to the field of speech and language pathology. You can use this podcast for ASHA CEUs. For more information about us and CEUs, go to our website, www.slpnerdcast.com. SLP Nerdcast is brought to you in part by listeners like you. Even small contributions keep our CEU prices low and our program ad-free. You can contribute on our website by clicking Support Our Work. You can also go to our website to find permanent products, notes, and handouts. Some items are free, others are not, but everything is always affordable. Visit our website to submit a call for papers to come on the show and present with us. Contact us anytime on Facebook, Instagram, or at info@slpnerdcast.com. You can also join our private Facebook group called SLP Nerds to post questions and engage in discussions about episode topics. We love hearing from our listeners, and we can't wait to learn what you have to teach us.
Just a quick disclaimer, the contents of this episode are not meant to replace clinical advice. SLP Nerdcast, its hosts and guests do not represent or endorse specific products or procedures mentioned during our episode, unless otherwise stated. We are not PhDs, but we do research our material. We do our best to provide a thorough review and fair representation of each topic that we tackle. That being said, it's always likely that there's an article that we've missed or another perspective that isn't shared. If you have something to add to the conversation, please email us. We'd love to hear from you.
I have two guests today, and it's so exciting. My dear friend and part of the Nerdcast team, Tracy Callahan, is standing in for Amy this week, who is on vacation. Welcome, Tracy.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
Tracy, you've presented on the Nerdcast before on Feeding and Swallowing, and then we had the pleasure of welcoming you onto our team. I'm going to call you the ASHA czar. You're in charge of all things ASHA and CEU related. Thank you so much for standing in for Amy, who's on vacation. Do you want to take a second to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I'm really excited for today's topic, and I'm excited to talk to our guest.
And we have the second guest who I mentioned. We're so excited to welcome Jenny Traver. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here with you both and support all of our listeners in the SLP Nerdcast.
Hooray. You're here to discuss school reentry after a brain injury. And as many of our listeners know, I don't know anything about brain injuries or really anything medical SLP related. Tracy does, and you obviously, this is in your wheelhouse, in your area of expertise. So we're so excited to learn from you. Before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Of course, I will share a little bit about myself. As Kate just mentioned, my name is Jenny Traver, and I'm a pediatric speech language pathologist and certified brain injury specialist in the Boston area. So I particularly focus on supporting children and adolescents with brain injuries through their rehabilitation process and as they transition home from the hospital and back into the school and community settings, which, as we know, we're all here today to talk about that school reentry piece. I began my clinical work at the inpatient rehab facility and have recently transitioned to the outpatient setting and founded my private practice, Cognitive SLP, where I provide intensive functional rehab for brain injury patients and focus a lot on the family unit, supporting the family in understanding what's going on and how they can advocate for their child as they return to school. So a huge piece of what I do is coaching families on this school reentry and helping to bridge the gap between the medical setting, medical professionals, and the educational setting. So this topic today is a huge passion of mine, and I'm so excited to share what I know with you all.
And I'm so excited to hear you say how much you support the whole family, because I feel like that does tend to be a theme across a lot of our topics. Treating the whole unit and not just the child. And now I'm just getting ahead of myself. So I'm thrilled to hear more. Before we really get into the good stuff, the powers that be require that I read our learning objectives and disclosures. Sometimes people write in and ask me to skip this part. I can't. I have to read it. And especially today, because the ashes are Tracy is here watching what I do. So I am going to try and get through this as quickly as possible. Learning objective number one, participants will understand the role of the SLP in supporting clients with brain injuries in returning to school. Learning objective number two, participants will identify key considerations for clients in the school reentry planning process. And learning objective number three, participants will identify three or more strategies and resources to support patient and family education on the return to school process. Disclosures. This is the part I really try to get through quickly. Jenny Traver, financial disclosures. Jenny is the founder and owner of Cognitive SLP, her private practice. Jenny Traver, non-financial disclosures. Jenny is a member of ASHA and the Academy of Certified Brain Injury Specialists. Kate, that's me. My financial disclosures. I'm the owner and founder of Grand Bois Therapy and Consulting, LLC, and co-founder of SLP Nerdcast. Kate, my non-financial disclosures. I'm a member of ASHA Sig 12 and serve on the AAC Advisory Group for Massachusetts Advocates for Children. I'm also a member of the Berkshire Association for Behavior Analysis and Therapy, MassABA, the Association for Behavior Analysis International, and the corresponding Speech Pathology and Applied Behavior Analysis Special Interest Group. Tracy Callahan, financial disclosures. Tracy is an employee of SLP Nerdcast, owns a private practice, and is the owner of an online learning platform called Guest Monster Games. Tracy Callahan, non-financial disclosures. Tracy is a member of ASHA and the corresponding special interest group, SIG 13 for dysphagia. There you go. I did it as fast as humanly possible.
All right. So Jenny, maybe you can start off by telling us as a refresher, a little bit about brain injury and the role of the SLP.
Of course. So when we think about this umbrella term of acquired brain injury, we're really talking about any injury that occurs to the brain after birth that will result in changes to the brain function at the level of the neurons. Now, the brain injury, I like to think of it as either an injury that's caused by a physical external force that could be a bump, a blow, or a jolt to the brain that could result in a brain injury, or an internal insult. So the external forces, as you can imagine, would be things like falling down, a motor vehicle accident, a biking accident, and that would cause a traumatic brain injury, which includes our concussions, which is big in the pediatric population. On the other hand, we also have a brain injury that can occur from within, and that would be a non-traumatic brain injury, including things like strokes, brain tumors, and infections that can affect the brain.
So I have a question. Is this common for children to have brain injuries? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
So, you know, Tracy, that's a great question. I often get a lot of people asking me how common it actually is. You know, do I really see kids with strokes? Do I really see kids that get into these accidents? And the answer is yes, it is almost just as common as the adult population. I think, you know, when you look at the CDC data for children that was gathered up until 2010, we see a lot of the brain injuries occurring in that traumatic brain injury region. Primarily due to falls, especially in the younger population under age 5. And then of course, in the teenagers as well, we see an increase in brain injuries around age 15 to 19. So the brain injuries in the teenager population would be more due to being struck against by or against something. So we would think about that as the car accidents, a biking accident, skateboarding accident.
Risk takers. Yes, teenagers out there taking risks and getting TBIs.
Exactly. So you're seeing the teenagers are a little bit more independent, taking risks, as you say, and they're more involved in their sports. And sporting activities can cause brain injuries, including those concussions that, you know, have gotten some more recent press.
And then just thinking about gender, is it common for both boys and girls to have a brain injury?
Yes, we do see a little bit of an increase in the boys, especially the teenage boys taking greater risks at that age, but it is across.
Something about the idea of these injuries in children is really pulling on my heartstrings. That must be a lot. I mean, just the grieving of the family, that's just hard.
It certainly is, Kate. And I think, you know, when I've talked with colleagues and friends about pediatric brain injury and especially the school reentry piece, I get a lot of our colleagues that are concerned about this topic. And I think it is because it can be more complex. It can tug on your heart, as you say, and you really want to support these children and families.
Agreed. So when we're thinking about the role of the speech therapist in working with a child with a brain injury, what is that going to look like? What role does an SLP have, speech pathologist have, working with brain injury just in general?
So an SLP that works with anyone that has had a brain injury is going to be assessing the changes that are occurring in the client's day-to-day functioning based on the injury itself. So we will see differences in how, in the functional abilities of a client based on the type of injury, the size, and the location of the injury within the brain. So we're often, again, regardless of age, the SLP is going to be looking at the changes in communication, both with verbal output, understanding language, the total communication, how a client's able to communicate their wants, needs, and ideas. They're also going to be looking at any changes in their swallowing or dysphagia that might be a result of the injury, changes in their motor speech and voice, and their any changes in their cognition or their thinking skills.
So I have to assume that most patients that come through your door haven't had a formal baseline testing. I mean, unless there was some other reason to get referral for testing. So when you say looking at changes, how are you collecting that initial information if they didn't have some sort of, you know, official, I'm using air quotes here, official measurement of, you know, baseline functioning?
That's a great question, Kate. You know, and I think it highlights, my answer highlights the role that the family plays in pediatric care, because a lot of our initial conversations, that in-depth parent discussion and case history that we take, is going to involve the family sharing information with us, letting us know what is typical for the child before the injury. What is their pre-injury performance? And some of that will be informal, you know, a description of what the day, a typical day looks like. Some of that will be a description about what school looks like, what type of student the child is. And sometimes we will, once we ask those beginning questions, we will figure out that some of these children have had prior testing. So again, as you say, it's not always the case, but those children that are on individualized education plans, who are receiving special education before their injury or additional accommodations, might have had some educational testing or neuropsychological testing prior to the injury that we can use to help decipher what that departure from baseline really is.
So important for all speech therapists as part of their initial assessment to figure out the baseline needs of their patient or their client, but it seems like even more important when a speech therapist is going to be doing this assessment following a brain injury.
And as you say, that's something that any SLP will be looking into, but especially with the school-aged population, I recommend that we ask these questions about the child as a student when we first meet the family, so we can start to put these pieces together.
So when working with a school-age client, I know that you're going to be talking a lot about what school is like at baseline, but at what point are you going to be discussing school reentry?
Yeah, that was going to be my question. So, you know, I have to assume based on the chronology of events, you have the injury, there is some sort of hospital stay, inpatient stay, presumably, or maybe not. And then there's, you know, some sort of maybe outpatient medical care. Where is that sort of like line between where the SLP sort of, I mean, most of us don't have the privilege of following the child all the way through all of these settings. So sort of piggybacking on to Tracy's question, when do you start talking about school reentry, but also how do you bridge that gap?
So I recommend that we, and what I do with my clients is to start talking about school when I first meet them, when I begin that relationship. And that's regardless of what level of care I'm at. So when I was working full-time at the inpatient rehab facility, I would still begin our relationship asking about school, again, to understand the baseline, understand what the child was like in school where they spend most of their time, and start to paint a better picture of where we are now in terms of their functional abilities, but also to begin that relationship with the family where, you know, we can talk about their primary concerns. We can talk about their questions. You know, I can understand where the family is in their knowledge of what supports are available in the schools for children, and piece together what type of education we might be discussing together.
So it seems like part of the reason why you're discussing that right off the bat is so you can figure out questions that you might have to help with the planning process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And to understand, to your point, Kate, what communication has happened with the school. So if I'm, on the other hand, if I'm receiving them after their inpatient stay, and they've already been at the acute care hospital and had an extended stay at the rehab facility, I might assume that somebody has talked to the school, but we know what happens when we assume. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather start talking to the family and really understand who has been communicating with the school, what information has been shared, and where we are in the planning process. So I can pick up from day one where the prior level of care left off.
That makes a lot of sense. And I mean, again, the family piece is so important.
So I have a question, Jenny. So thinking about adult SLPs who have experience with brain injury, but aren't very well-versed in helping children return to school, I imagine that some of our listeners may not be located somewhere where there is a robust support system for pediatric patients. So I imagine that some of the listeners who work with adult may find themselves supporting maybe older teens with brain injury.
So I get this question a lot from colleagues and friends in the field, both from the medical SLPs who have experience in brain injury rehab, but not really with the school age kids, and from the pediatric SLPs in the school setting. And, you know, I think the biggest thing to keep in mind about brain injury, we talked earlier about what brain injury, what acquired brain injury really is. One thing I didn't mention was that the main difference between adult brain injury and pediatric brain injury is that the pediatric brain is still developing. We know this, but when we think about pediatric brain injury, we need to take into account where the child is in their development and how the brain injury might impact that development, especially during critical periods. So for example, we know that during, you know, the ages of 0 to 5 years old, there is rapid brain growth across areas of the brain. So we need to make sure we keep an eye on the child, not only during that period, but as they continue to the next period of development through their, you know, 20 plus years until the brain is fully developed in the mid 20s. And I think, you know, when we think about adult clinicians and the school-based SLPs, I think keeping that in mind is important in terms of monitoring the child's progress and continually monitoring it, making sure that we're doing more frequent assessment, not always formal, but informal assessments, and understanding what we should be expecting from the child currently, but also especially at those periods of transition.
So I have a question related more to the perspective of the school-based SLP. So if you're a school-based SLP and you're listening, hi, first of all. Second of all, you know, you probably, every workplace has its own restrictions, right? So you might have a really high caseload. You might, you know, have certain expectations or certain norms. You find out that you're getting a student or one of your students is returning back to school. Do you have, you know, are there things that in your experience you have seen the school-based SLP do or embrace that you think really helps with this transition? Or do you have like recommendations or advice for that school-based SLP? Just given the nature of like a school environment?
Of course. You know, I think it's important for school-based SLPs to realize that in many cases, they will be providing a lot of education to the team about what this brain injury really means for the child. And I think that can feel scary at first if, you know, you're typically providing care for individuals with developmental difficulties and cognitive communication deficits. It's a change for you to start thinking about the acquired deficits.
No, I think that's such a good point because, you know, as SLPs, it is within our scope. We took neurology. We, you know, even if I technically did, don't tell anyone, you know, but you can dust off that information. And depending on just having worked in the schools for years or being affiliated with the schools for years, your team or your resources could vary vastly. You could be the person on the team who has the wealth of information about neurology, neuroplasticity, neurological brain development, all those kinds of things. I think that that's a, you know, inter-team education is such a great point.
And I think especially for the SLP in the school, you know, certainly as you're saying, Kate, to empower them to that they do have this knowledge, they do have this understanding that the rest of the team might have slightly differently, but also to encourage, I mean, any SLP that's listening right now, actually, reach out to your colleagues, ask the medical SLP to explain a little bit more what's going on with this, the brain injury, or why we're seeing these things. Share some of that discussion about the symptoms that are the challenges in school, or really, you know, when possible, communicate with the other providers in our own field to help that transition period. I think will be helpful for everyone. I find that a lot of the SLPs that I've worked with in the school settings, they can shed some light for me on what some of the demands are in the school, they're gonna understand the specific school team the best. And they might even have experience supporting an individual with a brain injury in the past that they can draw on their own knowledge. But I always like to remind anyone that you're not in this alone, you know, especially in brain injury rehab. We're so focused on this interdisciplinary aspect of really supporting each other, our other rehab therapists, our occupational therapists, our physical therapists, but especially our social workers, our guidance counselors, our other support staff that are going to be helping us make these decisions in conjunction with the family. So to share that information with each other to make informed decisions is really important.
So for our school-based SLPs, maybe who haven't worked specifically with a child with brain injury before, outside of maybe dusting off their textbook or checking in with a friend, do you have specific recommendations on what they could do to help get themselves ready to help support this student with their school reentry?
So I think, you know, at first, it's important to keep in mind that the child, as we were saying earlier, that this recovery process is going to continue once the child returns to school. And the supports that we initially put in place might change as well. In fact, we anticipate they will change and more rapidly than the other students on your caseload. So keeping in mind that this progress of a student with a brain injury should be closely monitored. The team might need to meet more frequently than usual. And we want to think about what ways we can keep an eye on the symptoms and help the child be successful in school.
That's a great point. Is there any specific organization, like an association or something like that, that SLPs could reach out to just sort of for information on what this process might look like, you know, just if they're unfamiliar with it, or maybe their graduate program didn't spend quite as much time, or maybe they don't have time to read through their neuro textbook?
Of course. So I definitely recommend two main resources. First, taking a look at the Brain Injury Association of America. They have a ton of information for brain injury providers, for families, for clients that are brain injury survivors themselves. And I find that their information really provides that nice balance between education and also the hands-on support services. So the Brain Injury Association of America has local chapters, state organizations that can provide social reentry, social groups, support groups, and connect you with some local resources. So that's a great place to start for actually for anyone listening, for SLPs, for family members, and for clients with brain injuries. I'd recommend taking a look at the Brain Injury Association. I also think, you know, another resource that's worth mentioning is the CDC. They have a tremendous amount of information specifically about pediatric concussions. And as I mentioned earlier, concussions make up about 75 to 80% of the traumatic brain injuries that we see in this population. So taking a look at the CDC, specifically the Heads Up campaign, it was created to help us really recognize and minimize the risk of concussions and other serious brain injuries. They have very easy to read handouts about some of the signs and symptoms of concussions. They have some support services as well for that return to school and return to sports process that you might see. So definitely checking out both of those resources is a great place to start.
And then Kate and Amy, the last time that I was on as a guest speaker, they quizzed me on what the special interest group was for for swallowing, and I just didn't have it memorized. But I looked it up. It's special interest group number 2. So I won't quiz you in the same way. And Asha does have a special interest group, neurogenic communication disorders. So if some of the listeners have a interest in that.
And Tracy, that's a great point. Certainly check out Asha. Check out their information about pediatric brain injury, both in their guidelines, some of the information they have about the assessment and treatment process, and additional resources. So of course, check out Asha as well.
And for anyone who's listening, we always put all of our resources in the show notes. So if you're listening to this while you're driving or running or whatever it is you're doing, all of these links will be in your podcast player for you to reference at another time. And I'm thinking a little bit more in depth about our second learning objective related to key considerations for the client. So we've talked about the role of the school-based SLP. We've talked about, you know, things that a school-based SLP can do to sort of like increase their scope or educate the team in anticipation of one of their students returning to school. I'm wondering about the clinical lens though. So for each one of our students, you know, they're a beautiful experiment of one, right? There's no like blanket, there are no blanket treatments. Everything needs to be individualized and customized. But generally speaking, are there certain clinical considerations that you think a school-based SLP could maybe focus on or use as a guiding principle when thinking about IEP objectives or any other clinical processes or procedures that they need to conduct as part of the school reentry process?
Mm-hmm. Certainly, that's a great question, Kate. I think, you know.
Thank you. I'm not doing much here. I'm just asking questions, but thank you for giving all the good information as you were.
My pleasure. When we think about providing this long-term support to individuals with brain injury and supporting their family in this process, we want to remember that these individuals are experiencing this adjustment to a new life after their injury. And it often cannot be discussed in their cognitive and communication deficits cannot be discussed in isolation from, you know, their other social components, the emotional components, and the psychological effects of this injury, again, on the whole family unit. And I think especially when we think about these kids getting back to school, we really want to consider what this child will need to be successful. And that goes beyond just the academic tasks. That goes beyond just their attention in the classroom. While that's very important, and we might look at different settings for them to initially begin their academic work, we also want to think about how to get them back in the school environment in general, how to reintegrate socially with their peers, what type of supports we might need to get in place for them to process this return to school. So I often recommend that families have a guidance counselor become a key player in the child's care when they return to school and regularly check in with the child from the beginning. I also think that, you know, this component of school reentry is not an all or nothing process. It's not a, you know, you're ready to go back to school full time or we can't talk about school. And I tell this to, again, all SLPs listening, but especially my families I talk about this with, that there's ways to get the child back to the school environment that is meaningful to them, that won't tax their system too much. So that's appropriate for them.
So I have a question about that. So for a student who is not ready to return to school full time, what could something like that look like?
Great question, Tracy. So typically, typically we're going to see a gradual return to school. It's most common that we won't see the child returning to a full course load, a full, you know, 5 days a week, full school days. So we might suggest that if the child's ready to do some academic work, maybe we'll try some tutoring first. Maybe we will go in for half days initially, or for the older kids, maybe they will choose one course to follow a little bit. And then as they get comfortable with that, we can add in a second or third course. If the academics are overwhelming, if the child is not ready to even begin the academic piece, we can start to get creative. And this, I think, is where our, you know, creative hats as SLPs can come on. And we can start recommending ways for the child to return in a social capacity. Because remember, kids are, I mean, all of us are social humans, but kids are meant to be in school. They're meant to be with their peers. We know that they learn a lot from their peers. So, and especially after an injury, we want to give them opportunities to remain in contact with their classmates. And so I think we can start to think outside of the box in those scenarios.
So thinking about for students when they're returning, I imagine that the IEP process with all of these different accommodations and modifications and changes is probably going to be an important process of that school reentry.
So yes, when we talk about the specific academics, part of the reason we want to begin those early conversations with the family, as we mentioned earlier, is so that we can talk to the school about what supports are available. And depending on what the team recommendation is, we might be considering accommodations to support the child's ability to access the curriculum, or we might be considering special education through an individualized education plan, as you mentioned. So what I was starting to talk about was you know, even before we get to this stage of academics, or frankly, while this is happening in the background, while, you know, the school is starting to put together their team and considering what they might do for testing this child, we can already be thinking about what the child could do to get back into the school environment. So as an example, instead of, you know, to break this a little bit more concrete, I've had a client before who loved music class and they weren't ready to go back to school full time, but we did have them sit in on a music class initially when they went home while they still continued their rehab therapy. And then slowly we added academics in. I had another client who absolutely loved lunchtime. All he could tell me about was hanging out with his friends at school during lunch was the best. And the cafeteria food was awesome. He might've been the only one, no offense. But for him, we started having him join lunchtime. So he went into school once a week and that was the day he looked forward to most. And I think when we think about it in individual steps, again, in that it's not all or nothing, we can start to piece together what's most important to this child and their family. You know, if that social component is, then by all means, let's start there while we continue the rehab.
Have you ever experienced pushback? So you're describing this as like a slow and gradual process that can, you know, have a gray area that is customized specifically to where the student is and what their needs are. But have you ever had in your experience working with the family or even working and collaborating with the school SLP, are there instances where the administration or, you know, they say, well, no, it's all or nothing. You can't, we're not going to do X, Y, and Z for you. Is that something that happens in the brain injury world?
So, you know, I think one thing to keep in mind that we should mention about the public schools is that they are required to support students in their school district with the services that are needed for them to excel and access the school curriculum. And a brain injury, if the brain injury is affecting the child's ability to participate fully in that in the school environment and access the curriculum, then the school is required by law to figure out what supports need to be put in place for this student. And that's where we start to get the discussions about, you know, special education or extra supports in the classroom, additional tutoring support, and as Tracy had brought up earlier. In terms of, you know, overall, the question of pushback on the whole team, I think, you know, whenever there is pushback, whether that be from family members or other team members at any setting, I think, you know, I remind myself that part of our job as an SLP is to provide that education to help our team members see that why we're doing this, why this is our recommendation, not just telling them this is what it has to be, but to really explain why, you know, what the value is of having the child integrate slowly back into the community, the value of those social interactions and how that plays a role in their communication and keeping their foot in the door with their schoolmates and classmates. And of course, the value in providing that individualized care for that child and continuing to monitor as they progress.
I have another question, Jenny. So earlier you had mentioned that a child may not be ready to return to school full time. How is that determined whether or not they're ready, especially for some of the speech therapists who this might be the first time they're supporting a child with a brain injury?
So I think you want to, like any client, when you're an SLP working with anyone who's trying to return to a functional setting, we want to consider what demands are being placed on that child in the setting in which they're trying to return to, whether that be home, if they're in the hospital trying to go to the home setting. We always consider safety. Are they able to do this on their own? Do they need some additional supports to succeed or to be independent? We also, same with work. When an adult client is returning to the work setting, we want to see, can they complete these tasks independently, or do we need additional supports in place? The same goes for children. We want to think about the whole client, what we're seeing in the therapy room, and how that translates to the school setting. So for example, if we're looking at a client who is struggling to pay attention to a task that's highly structured and supportive in a quiet therapy room with just us and no other distractions, are we expecting them to succeed in a noisy classroom with multiple instructions happening at once in a very unstructured setting? You know, so we want to think about how what we're seeing would then be occurring in the school setting.
So when a speech therapist is designing their therapy, then it would be important to consider what the demands are that are going to be placed on them in the classroom. And maybe I'm just guessing here, trying to choose activities and exercises that may reflect that to determine how they're participating.
So certainly we can, in the therapy room, I do, whenever I can, start incorporating academic or school tasks. I try to, because it's one, that's, again, that's our ultimate goal of the client and the family, is to get back to school, but it's also going to help me better understand where those limitations are, what challenges come up, and I can problem solve what type of supports do work, and then share that with the school team.
I think that this comes up every single episode, but this is making me think of how important collaboration is in interdisciplinary work in the school setting. And anybody who listens to this podcast regularly knows exactly what is about to come out of my mouth. The importance of indirect service and how our service delivery as speech and language pathologists is a continuum. And indirect service, so your consultation with the classroom teacher and learning what that classroom environment is like, exactly what you're saying, what kind of distractions, what is the learning environment actually going to be like? Collecting that information and collaborating with that school teacher is still part of service for your student, even though it's not direct service. So really understanding and embracing an indirect service delivery model, particularly for these situations that you're describing, where you're really trying to help someone transition into, you know, if they were in a general education environment before, transitioning back into that general education environment and making sure that all of those bridges are built between outpatient or between, you know, your therapy room and that educational environment are so important. And you can't do that without collaboration. And school SLPs don't have time for collaboration outside of indirect service. And I just think it's so important. And I love the way that you're describing how that's a critical piece of the therapy that you're providing as a speech pathologist. It makes so much sense.
Kate, that's a great point that you make about collaboration, and, you know, has been a common thread through our discussion, collaborating with other SLPs across the continuum, and of course, collaborating with our interprofessional team. And I think especially school-based SLPs, when they're supporting children with a brain injury as they return to school, we want to think about who the key players are on the school team. In the school setting that will help us determine what some of these supports will look like. So after a child experiences a brain injury, we might see some changes, as I mentioned earlier, to their physical mobility, how the child's able to move around in their space. Can they walk independently? Are they using a walker or crutches, or do they need a wheelchair? And that might have an impact on how the child can actually get around the school. So we want to talk about, with our physical therapists and occupational therapist colleagues, what recommendations they might have to support this child in that respect. Similarly, we might, if there's a change to the child's communication skills, we might be looking, or ability to access, physically access information and materials in the classroom, we might be looking at assistive technology. So this, for our SLPs, we're thinking more about, you know, communication devices, both the lower tech and the higher tech communication devices, and what systems are already in place. And of course, beginning that discussion of what additional supports we might need. And I think, you know, above all, when we think about brain injury rehab and school reentry, we must think about how the brain injury is impacting the child emotionally and socially. And I think there's a lot more understanding in recent years about the difficulty these children have in reintegrating into their social setting, especially the older kids. You know, you're not able to interact the same way, or you might not be able to interact the same way. And
those teenage years are tough anyway.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So they're experiencing changes in their own identity, and part of our role as professionals supporting them is helping them work through that change. So again, making sure the guidance counselor is involved, making sure if there are additional psychological supports are needed, that they're available, or recommendations are made to the family, so that we can keep an eye on their whole person, making sure that they're thriving after this injury.
And I love what you said. I love everything you're saying. It makes perfect sense. And I love the idea of this, you know, very passionate about collaboration and interdisciplinary work. And I think you've made, you know, my bias, I'm an AAC person. So I hear you say assistive technology. And I think it's another good reminder that AAC is just one slice of assistive technology, that assistive technology is a larger umbrella that includes any technology that can help an individual access the curriculum and either physically access their environment or linguistically access their environment. And that can mean so many different things. So if you are listening and you're, you know, an SLP with a bias for AAC like me, you know, just remembering that the assistive technology professional that you reach out to might not be an SLP. The assistive technology professional could be a different individual on your team if you don't have access to an assistive technology professional, because I know a lot of districts don't. Advocate with your administration to get someone, get a consultation, or make a connection with someone else in your community. I think that's, you know, keep talking. I just love everything you're saying. I think it makes so much sense, and I love collaboration. So,
you know, Kate, I thank you for saying that. And I do think that, you know, you've mentioned a few times that your heart, we're tugging on the heartstrings, and I don't think we could talk about brain injury rehab in the pediatric population and not remind ourselves how children are meant to learn and have fun and find joy in every day. And part of our job as a pediatric provider is to help them communicate what they need and want, but also to enjoy themselves and to help the family see how we can do that. So, you know, that's just a separate plug, finding joy every day, that, you know, I think is especially important in this population. So
I know I've mentioned a couple of times through this recording that, you know, it pulls on the heartstrings, and I'm just imagining myself as a school-based SLP, having a lot of big feelings about my client, about my student who has just suffered potentially a tremendous loss, and their parents and their family have gone through this traumatic ordeal. Can you talk to us a little bit about balancing those emotions and reactions as you move through the treatment process, or what impact that might have on you as a clinician and professional and a human being?
Of course, Kate. And I'm so glad you brought this up, because it is a huge loss for the families and for the client. And I think it's okay for us to feel that. It's okay for us to sit there and support the family through this and understand that they're still grieving in this period. You know, it can be challenging when you're used to working with a different type of population to then get a child on your caseload that is adjusting to this new identity, this new lifestyle that is so different from who they were weeks or months ago. So certainly taking that into account, taking care of yourself, and again, sounding like a broken record, turning to your colleagues, finding support in each other, being able to share some of these feelings with your team members, but also being able to sit with the discomfort with the family member, I think is important. And work as hard as we can, again, to be those creative SLPs that we all are, to find the joy. I used to say that to my clients, especially in the rehab setting, that I believe that laughter is the best medicine. So I would tell jokes of the day with my client, and that's what we put on my whiteboard, was a joke of the day. And we'd come up with some of them together or practice saying them together. And I think those little moments are what's going to make a difference. So as much as we can find those joyous moments and celebrate them, celebrate the small progress with the client and their family, and bring in aspects of their life, I think will help us cope, help the family cope, and really be that supportive team together.
Thank you so much for saying it. I feel like that's such an important perspective, and I really appreciate all of those insights.
Now, a topic that we didn't really touch on that is also important in brain injury rehab is this role that fatigue plays. And this is fatigue, you know, reduced energy levels that can affect us physically and mentally. So I think, especially in the school setting, we want to think about how we can build in additional breaks for these kids, how we could lessen the load of some activities so that they can participate in more activities in general. And again, you know, that could be placed on the SLP in the school to help the team understand fatigue. And especially how, you know, in brain injury recovery, we might see an increase in some behaviors, but those behaviors might be due to the child's fatigue or the child's system being taxed. So, you know, thinking creatively about how we can reduce the demands of an activity or of the environment, and build in those extra breaks and downtime is really going to make a difference in the child's experience of symptoms, but also their performance overall.
And again, how important it is to talk to your other teammates. So, and that collaboration piece. So if Johnny is having a hard time in your lens, are they having a hard time somewhere else? Are they seeing you at the end of the day? Are there other things going on outside of school that could be affecting them in terms of fatigue or behavior? And you don't have that information if you don't, you know, advocate for the time to talk to the other members on mm-hmm. the school team. And I think that that's so, so, so important. I'm just repeating myself now because I obviously think that's so important.
And then thinking about it, you know, coming from a feeding therapy lens, I know that in feeding, you know, when a child isn't nourished, they might be acting out in school, but really it's just that they're feeling hungry. So I imagine it's the same with brain injury, where we might see these negative behaviors. And it's really part of this underlying brain injury that they're working to overcome rather than just a negative behavior in isolation.
Mm. Of course, Tracy, that's a great point. Being able to think critically about what we're seeing and why we might be seeing that is huge, especially as the child progresses. Because again, those periods of transition, when the demands of the environment are increased, we might see more difficulty or more behaviors arise. And we want to think about what we could do to help that child. And, you know, especially along the same lines, whenever we have a child with a brain injury, we want to make sure that the brain injury is documented in the school documents. I know this is kind of shifting gears, but I want to make sure we mention this in this conversation because in the pediatric population, we do tend to see changes continue as the child ages. We want to make sure that at any point in the child's schooling, they can receive the services that they need. And one of the ways that we do that is by making sure that the school team understands that there has been an injury to the brain, and we do expect to see recovery over the long term.
No, yes, that makes so much sense. I'm also thinking about, you know, this third learning objective about strategies and resources that can support patient and family education, as well as SLP education, if an SLP is listening and would like to learn more. You've already listed two, just to recap, the Brain Injury Association of America and the CDC, particularly the pediatric concussions, and they have a heads up campaign you mentioned, along with a website with some robust handouts. Are there other resources that you would recommend SLPs check out, or resources that SLPs might recommend to their families or patients?
Of course. So I think a big piece, in addition to the Brain Injury Association and the CDC, a big piece is how we can help clients and their families understand what's going on. And I find, especially with the pediatric population, we need to think creatively about how we teach children about their brain and what has happened and why we're seeing changes, especially when there might be a difference in awareness and understanding of their brain, depending on their age level and the injury itself. I do recommend the Model Systems Knowledge Translation Center, which has a bunch of resources for supporting children in particular, understanding brain injury. And in particular, they have this great section of info comics, as they call it, which are essentially comic strips about brain injury and how it might affect our sleep, how it might affect our emotional state. It might cause headaches. So it helps kids understand what's going on in a more of a social story type way. I also think, I love brainline.org is another wonderful website that is a great resource specifically for to share with family members, for an easy to read or multiple easy to read articles about brain injury in general, but also in the pediatric population and specifically getting back to school. I hope those resources, in addition to all the resources that ASHA provides us with, will help you feel more comfortable in this complex topic and really feel able to support these families and these children with brain injuries, so that we can help them excel in school and in life during their recovery.
And as you spoke so much about everything that the school-based SLP is going to have to keep in mind and keep tabs on to help support the patient that they're working with, it's great to have those resources so they can know where to look when they need help.
Mm-hmm. And I should also mention, we could certainly go on and on about this topic for many hours, and I have many other resources that I can share at another time. But one thing I should mention too is for any SLP who is just dipping their toes in this, also, you know, learn a little bit more from the Department of Education in your state, what supports are available for special education and accommodations in the school. And that, you know, even if you go, so we're in Massachusetts, if you go to the Department of Education of Massachusetts, you can find a detailed process of the IEP process for family members to review or to review with them and the forms that are needed for that. So there's information everywhere. And more than anything, I hope that we all continue to ask these questions of each other, of our colleagues, and that this can be the beginning of this discussion. So when questions do come up, you can always reach out to me as well. And I'm happy to connect you with the information I know, answer them if I can, or point you in the right direction.
That is incredibly helpful. This whole thing has been very eye-opening for me. You are a wealth of knowledge, and we're so grateful for your time. This is so awesome. Do you have any, you know, parting words of wisdom for the SLPs listening? Or I know you mentioned people can contact you, some specific websites or email addresses that you want to share, just as your parting gift.
Of course. Please, you can always find me at cognitiveslp.com. Please do reach out with questions, comments, thoughts. This is a topic I'm very passionate about, and I hope to continue to support our field in helping this population. So definitely reach out and keep an eye on cognitiveslp.com. I'm hoping to put some resources together on this topic to share and really support our field in this area.
Awesome. So just as another, sort of reminder, we are going to have links to everything in the show notes, including to Jenny's website, as well as all of the references that she mentioned. You can use this episode for ASHA CEUs. If you would like to earn ASHA CEUs for listening, cruise on over to our website, www.slpnerdcast.com. You can find the episode and click through to take the quiz. If you have any questions for us, you can email us anytime at info@slpnerdcast.com. And if you have questions or want to engage in discussion, you can join our private Facebook group called SLP Nerds. So thank you so much, Jenny, for coming. Tracy, you're an amazing wing woman. Thank you so much for joining as well. And we hope everybody learned something. And thank you again so much for joining us.
Thank you.